For our non-British listeners, do you want to explain briefly what Morris dancing looks like?
It's a very sort of primal, passionate English mating dance. Dance between a man and a handkerchief.
Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry Maxtay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. They say it takes two to tango. Something of a truism, of course. They could just as easily have said it takes two to waltz or to foxtrot. But what if you need more than two people to get something done? Well, there are other dances you can form into useful phrases. For example, it takes three to form the most basic of conga lines. It takes eight to do the quadrille. It takes 10 to 12 people being shouted at by a perma-tanned Irish-American arsehole to river dance. It takes 20 plus to form a ceilidh busy enough not to feel too exposing. And of course, if you can do things all by yourself, you can just go with, it takes one person, one breakup and one bottle of gin to do the single ladies dance by yourself at your cousin's wedding and to shout at the DJ when you refuses to play it again and to steal the bouquet off the person who caught it and to rip the heads off all the flowers through every sob and to scratch your best friend in the face when she tells you that it'll be fine and he really, really wasn't worth it. There'll be plenty more fish in the sea and before you know it, you're yelling, if he liked it, why didn't he put a ring on it? While vomiting onto the mother of the bride's fascinator. And with me, as ever, the Fred to my Ginger, putting his feet on top of mine and leaving just enough space for Jesus, is my own dance partner, Ben Vandervelde.
Hello, everyone. And
sorry, I just had a blackout there. What just happened?
That's absolutely fine. You went into a vortex of pain. But it's fine. If I am the Fred to your Ginger, it means on this podcast you do everything I do, but backwards and in heels.
Yeah, exactly. Or am I the Dubeck to your Widdicombe?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, you don't watch Strictly?
No.
It's the one reality show along with Bake Off that I will not judge you. In fact, I will judge you positively for watching.
I'll watch Bake Off and I've got sneakily into The Voice.
Oh, why?
Because it's not as awful as X Factor.
Yeah, well, I mean, very little is at this point.
But no, I mostly like The Voice because you have, like...
Is it the spinny chairs, Ben? Let's be honest.
It's partially the spinny chairs, and partially because they'll all spin round and then try and pitch to the person that they want to hire. And Will.i.am will go, well, I've got a number of top 10 hits, and then Ricky, whatever, from the Kaiser Chiefs will just go, I'm a one-hit wonder that somehow has kept going for over a decade.
Yeah.
And then Tom Jones will go, well, I worked with Elvis. And it's just every time, it's that slapping his dick out on the counter.
It's a bit like when Deborah Meaden would pitch for something on Dragon's Den where several people said they were in and you just go, well, I'm Deborah and I'm the one that everyone likes. And you go, yeah, fair enough, actually. That's essentially how that works. You must watch a bit of Strictly, Ben. It's really good.
All right.
You get to watch people actually improving at a skill rather than, oh, you can sing. Great. Well, let's continue to recognise that for 3 months.
I'm not sure that that's what I want in this world. I want to watch people slowly getting better, slowly learning, and achieving.
I'd watch a reality show where you got someone who was really good at something and over the course of 7 months, they had to disimprove.
Watch Cristiano Ronaldo becomes a Sunday League footballer.
Yeah, or Britain's Best Potter, but each week they lose a finger.
Sponsored by the Serbian Secret Service.
Yeah.
That sounds cracking. You also, you made me wonder something, which is the philosophical question of when does a conga line become a conga line?
I have to mention them because my sister-in-law is really scared of conga lines.
What?
I don't know, is it because they're like giant snakes, or whether it's the forced fun, or the sort of the inevitability of once you're in it, there's really no elegant way of dismounting again. But she's really scared of them.
Yeah, it's like, what is a conga line with two people in it? It's just someone assaulting someone else from behind.
It's an abortive piggyback.
Yeah.
It's a piggyback with stabilisers on.
Lacked commitment. Yes.
So this week's guest is a comedy writer and a performer for television, radio and the stage.
Ooh.
Yes, and she is also her own hype woman by the sounds of it.
She's got a drum roll going.
She has written for the likes of Tracy Ullman's show on BBC One. She has been BAFTA nominated for the children's show Sorry I've Got No Head and also the BAFTA winning That Mitchell and Webb Look. And I love the fact that you're doing reaction shots to everything I say.
You just do a different vowel each time.
She also works as a haunted forest impersonator. It is the wonderful Abigail Burdess.
Hello.
So what's your signature dance move?
I haven't got a signature dance move.
No.
I can do a bit of a slut drop.
What's the slut drop?
You know when you just like...
It's the bend.
It's when you do that straight down and then straight up, but just to prove how strong your thighs are.
Which when you jump down into a squat.
And then you jump
and
up
then
again.
But with arse in twerking position as you come up again, yeah.
Yeah. If I get drunk enough, I'll do that.
Okay. Barry, fetch the rye whiskey.
I know. It would make great podcasting. We'll just have a camera set up and have a GIF ready for the listeners.
Are you a good dancer or a bad dancer?
I'm not great.
Okay.
I used to be quite good and then I became really seriously injured.
Oh.
Yeah, but I did actually, my foot, I have an injured foot, but I did get asked to do a reality show once. Doing the dance, doing that, slowly improving.
which one?
What was it? It was some couples show on ITV where they teach couples to dance.
Oh, yes. They did it with celebrity couples.
Yeah, like celebrity couples. I really, really wanted to do it because I thought because I'm sort of crippled.
Yes.
I describe myself as lame. I'm halt. Like, and that would be like...
You've had an arrow in the flank.
Yeah, exactly. That would be a real story. I mean, they'd have loved
me. You have
the
arc built in.
I'd be like, I thought I'd never be able to walk again. Look at me now, spinning in sequins. That's what I wanted to happen.
I always really wanted to be able. Did you have first dance? You had first dance at your wedding.
Yeah.
I did. Did you do that thing as well? Yeah. That's the most nerve-wracking thing. I think it was the most fraught debate was the sitting down with my now husband and going, so are we doing lessons or are we just going to do a thing? And we ended up just picking, I'm going to go back there someday from the Muppet movie.
Yeah.
Which is really lovely slow dance. And it just ended up, because weddings, as you know, are just you frantically running around trying to make sure you've had FaceTime with every person in the room, that by the time we got to the first dance, it was just really nice to hug and sway for 3 minutes and just have like a bit of time on our own.
Yeah.
So it didn't really feel too much pressure.
We went to one rock and roll dancing class. And then,
cheating!
Well, no, and then what they did is basically they made you split up the couples and dance with everyone else. And by the time my wife came back to me 45 minutes later, she was fucking fuming. She was like, all these other people don't know how to do it right, and I just want to learn with you, and we're never coming here again. This is why I love you, darling.
Oh,
it was good,
nice.
Though. You played a little bit to the crowd for your one.
Well, naturally, because whilst my wife was at a wedding with her friends, I was at a gig with an audience.
What was your speech like?
5 stars.
Yeah.
Except from Steve Bennett.
Yeah. My speech was semi-improvised and I genuinely threw in some new stuff to see how it would go. And I got a little bit carried away because I told a story about my wife being the most belligerent drunk I've ever met.
Yeah.
And it went down an absolute storm, but she gave me quite the telling off afterwards.
Yeah. What did you do?
I did a speech, but I was very much... I wanted to be lot. I wanted to be headlining in my own fucking way. Of course you do. I didn't get to headline. So the best man went last instead. And I was like, I just don't want him to be funnier than me. It was very, it was extremely irritating.
Is that like the making sure the bridesmaids don't look as pretty?
Yeah, exactly.
Making sure the speakers aren't as funny. Yeah.
But David Mitchell was the best man, so he was following. So I was like, in some ways I was kind of like, I'm glad I'm not following him. But
yes.
It really helped. The dress really helps. Because
it gives you status.
It gives you status, and also you can be like, you can make really rude jokes in that dress.
I don't know why more stand-ups don't wear wedding dresses on stage.
Do you know what? Afterwards, I genuinely thought about doing a show in a wedding dress because I'm like, this is a powerful thing. Like,
yeah.
If you're going to spend that much on an item of clothing, you want to get more than one wear out of
it. Exactly.
Yeah, precisely.
So make it tax deductible. Get in.
We always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world. Abby, what would you say that is?
I'm pretty bad at washing myself.
You
look
perfectly clean at the moment. It's quite warm. You've got sleeves.
It's quite. Yeah, I'm not good at it. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. Do you enjoy washing yourself?
My husband thinks I take far too long in the shower. I'm one of those that I would take 2 or 3 a day.
I got caught early in my marriage. Just running a bath and then hiding in the bathroom and pretending I'd had a bath and coming out.
What?
And I was like,
cowering in the corner of the opposite side of the room.
Like, you haven't actually had a bath, have you? I was like, yeah, I have.
So this is like a conversation in your husband and a cartoon dog. Yeah. Going, yeah, like baths. Yeah. Don't know what the problem is.
Buying bath bombs to try and put them off with the sound.
Yeah, it's fine. I've definitely had a bath. Yes, it's rubbish having a bath, isn't it?
No, a skill sets go. It's not that hard.
It's
surely.
Basic. It's basic. You should be able to wash.
You'd have thrived at like Louis XIV's court in France, and when they had like 4 a year or something, that sort of thing. Yeah,
I would be absolutely fine in that environment. I think it's boarding school. I went to boarding school.
Yeah,
and so you just sort of splash yourself with water and then move on
because it's always cold.
Yeah,
and the pressure's never great.
Yeah, and you don't want to be naked. Like, I don't like being naked, but I'm a bit of a never nude.
And you don't like being naked on your own.
No,
like, I mean,
that's more depressing because then you can look at yourself and you're like, oh my god, like that's it. Then all the self hate comes.
Do you not
out.
Do you the hype then for yourself? You go, ooh.
Hey, come on, welcome to the bathroom.
But bathroom mirrors are weird because some bathroom mirrors, you look at it and be like, hey, I may not have worked out for 3.5 months, but I've still got a little bit of a six pack.
Ben
and
lives others... in a hall of mirrors from a full
No, but then other bathroom mirrors are just kind of like, here is your sordid truth right in front of you.
No, those ones that you're meant to do for when you're looking at your pores, the really like magnifying ones.
God.
Yeah, someone said, oh, you have to buy one of those when like you get older because that's the way you make sure you stave off old age by caring for all those pores. And the only thing I think of them when I see them is that, oh my god, you were like seeing myself in HD for the first time.
Not ideal. I catch sight of myself in the shower head sometimes, and that's all right because
it's leaking.
That's kind of okay because it's sort of the way it distorts my body covers up most of it. So I'm like, yeah, that's fine, I'll deal with that.
Thanks to the internet, we can expose ourselves to intense, new ideas incredibly easily. But what happens when the conversation seems harmless and takes a dark turn? Would you even notice? Can you log off and leave? Or does it follow you around when your phone screen's locked? My name's Helen, and I make a documentary-style podcast called That's a Cult. In each episode, I investigate a different internet community and try to work out if it's a bit cultish or not. I speak to interesting people from all over the world, get close to the members, and hear from the critics. So far, I've found out why clean eating is so addictive, why pro and anti-vaxxers have more in common than they think, and how a message board can encourage people to stop touching themselves. If this sounds like your kind of thing, listen on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. Just search That's a Cult.
So this week we are going to talk about the world's worst dance, and we're going to start with Ben. Ben, and a one, and a two, and a one, two, three.
On the offbeat, here we go. So, I'm going to start by briefly telling you about a gentleman who used to come to the cocktail bar I worked at religiously every Sunday for about 3 years. I worked at the Revolution in Newcastle.
Sorry, calling it a cocktail bar. Calling Revolution a cocktail bar is a bit of a stretch.
The Revolution I was in a repurposed 19th century bank, and Sundays to Thursdays looked quite classy. And Fridays to Saturdays looked like the end times. But Sundays was nice, we had a bit of soul and funk on, and this guy would come on the dance floor and dance on his own, beautifully pressed shirt, lovely smart trousers, and he was dancing, man, and we're like, aww. And then one Sunday night, my boss came and was like, Ben, come quick, what is it? It's Dancing Man. What's happened to him? He's got his cock out. And it was just like the fall of a hero. I've never seen anyone so reluctant to get the bouncers to drag him out. It was like, oh, this like little silent solo hero had fallen from grace.
He was your very own Me Too story. You hear about something and you're like, yeah, fuck, I'm Harvey Weinstein. Then you go, oh, Aziz Ansari, no.
Yeah.
You're one
not
of the good ones.
Man. Was it deliberate? Was it a deliberate cock out, or was it just slipped
That's
out?
That's quite some accident.
If it is a very faulty zip.
Yeah.
A
very
exactly.
faulty pants.
Yes. I cannot conceive of a way.
What dance was he doing?
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
If you were able to do a dance that can animate your penis to undo the zip from within, like some sort of escapologist, then actually that deserves an award. Yeah.
Prehensile penis. It's the name of my band I'm about to point.
but that's a little bit of everyday naughtiness. But if we're going to talk about worst dancers, there's three I want to talk about. The first is we're going to go to 1913 and the first showing of The Rite of Spring by Igor Stravinsky. And this was a very controversial piece of music anyway, because it was like very atonal and dissonant. A riot broke out in Paris when it was put on, and it was basically quite a pretentious Parisian audience, and the dance was very anti-French ballet, so it was all really sort of jagged-edged dancing and not like beautiful silken movement of ballet. And the rite that they were carrying out was Russian pagan dancing that ended with the sacrifice of a single virgin woman. Sorry, metaphorically speaking, so I believe.
Yeah.
But what...
That's a hell of a... When your agent calls you for that gig. Listen, I think it'd be really good exposure. You are going to have to be naked, and there might be some death. Do you do death only professionally?
Yeah.
It was Nijinsky, wasn't it? Choreographed, I think.
Nijinsky's a racehorse.
Nijinsky is a racehorse named after the dancer.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, good. I think it was Nijinsky and for the very first.
That would explain why the dancing was weird.
I think that the dancer and choreographer was originally named after another racehorse.
Which himself was named after a previous dancer.
Horses are good at keeping time because they just tap their hoops as they go. But what basically, once the dancer started, there was a shouting up in the gallery of, "A doctor! A doctor!" And then someone else shouted louder going, "A dentist! A dentist!" Just like absolutely mercilessly. Well, I think because they thought the dancers were ill. Yeah. Because the dance, Nijinsky made them dance like automata. So it was like a mixture of this like really modernist dance movement to make them almost robotic.
He was doing robotics?
He was doing, he was doing the robot!
Peter Crouch is a revolutionary in the dance world.
I'd love it if someone interviewed Peter Crouch about his girl celebrity. Because, well, it's based on Nijinsky in the right of spring.
The dancer, not the racehorse.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was one thing I was going to suggest. Secondly, staying in the Russian world, in 2016 in Moscow, there was an Olympic ice dancing gold medalist and her dancing partner caused controversy by dressing up in concentration camp uniforms for a routine on a popular television show.
Yeah, I saw that. That was not good.
No, not good at all. No. And the way they defended it was that it was based on Life is Beautiful, the amazing film by Roberto Benigni. But that has a bit of context and a bit of narrative. But they dressed up as concentration camp victims on ice.
Yeah.
That's the bit, like Holocaust on ice.
There are tonal problems there.
Yeah. And now some ads.
Weirdly, like, as everything, everyone's got an opinion on this. The Israeli culture minister said motifs from the Holocaust are not for parties, not for dance, not for reality TV. However, the director of the Israel office of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, which is a center for Holocaust education, described the dance as quite kitschy, which I just don't think is a good enough defense of it.
Wow. I think Simon Wiesenthal, I didn't think they were that friendly a reviewer.
Yeah, it was a 3 that read like a 4. Yeah. But basically, his view is that the Holocaust is not really spoken about in Russia, partially because I think the Russians are going, guys, you may have lost 6 million Jews, we lost 20 million citizens, so priorities. So his opinion was like, anything that gets the conversation happening in Russia is okay.
Yeah.
And to be fair, it's not as bad taste as another Holocaust-themed sports routine.
Why?
Because
why?
In 1996, a French synchronized swimming team...
No, not at the Olympics.
...depicted the arrival of the Jewish women at the death camps and the final march to the gas chambers with the music from Schindler's List behind them.
Why?
How could they tell that that's what they were doing? I mean, what was the indicators? What were signifiers did they have on their swimming costumes?
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, I hardly think that if they're playing the theme tune from Schindler's List that they're doing a Busby Berkeley routine.
Yeah.
That would be awful. Art is risk, but that was too obviously in the risk column. But that's not my choice. For my choice, we're going to go to the late 19th century of America, and a dance that in the Native American language is called the Nanisana, or the Ghost Dance.
Okay.
Mm. Now, the Ghost Dance was part of a new religious movement that was incorporated into already existing American Indian belief systems, and it was created by a American Indian spiritual leader called Wovoka. Now, Wovoka believed that this dance would reunite the spirits of the living with the spirits of the dead, bring the spirits of the dead back to life to fight on their behalf, and make the white colonists leave, bringing peace, prosperity, unity to all the Native American peoples, and also bring back to life all of the bison and buffalo that had been killed by the white colonists.
A bit like that bit in Lord of the Rings when they all come out of the...
Precisely like that.
Yeah.
That's a hell of an ask for a choreographer.
It really is.
What do you want this piece to achieve? Well, where do I start?
Yeah, and spoiler alert, guys, it did not happen.
They took the West Side Story approach to fighting the colonists, so we'll dance them away.
Hey, okay, guys, let's decide it this way. Yeah. Dance off.
That would have been... That is an episode of Strictly I would happily watch. Yes.
If they can bring zombies to life.
The dance is described in this way. Oh my god!
Now on Strictly,
and now
we're going to do a dance which will bring the zombies back to life and wreak havoc on all colonialists.
Yeah, the insurance in Elstree is phenomenal.
Yeah, so the description of it was, Wovoka said to the tribes, and what happened with this dance is it was a dance that was part of the Northern Paiute tribe, but it became so popularised amongst all of the tribes, and this was like the last stand of the Native Americans as they were getting wiped out. And so it spreaded to other tribes, including the Lakota and the Sioux.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to them, when you get home, you must begin a dance and continue for 5 days.
Oh.
Dance for 4 successive nights, and on the last night, continue dancing until the morning of the 5th day, when all must bathe in the river and then return to their homes. You must do all this in the same way. I want you to dance every 6 weeks, make a feast at the dance, and have food that everybody may eat. I mean, regardless of context, that is a lot of effort.
That is a keep fit programme.
Yeah, that is a...
Forget a reanimation effort.
That is a first class test.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with the dancing, it'd be the washing in the river.
Yes. Did they do it? Was there any sort of big occasions of it being danced, or was it just sort of everyone has to go home and do it at home?
No. So people started doing it before great battles against the Americans, because what Wovoka said is he built on his initial pitch of what it would do, and that he said it would that the creator would give him powers over the weather, and that once, if every Native American danced the dance, that he, Wovoka, would become the deputy in charge of affairs in the Western United States, leaving the current President Harrison as God's deputy in the East. Again, did not happen.
Right.
So what happened in the end was, by the end of 1890, it had so freaked out the American authorities that they went, right, we are putting an end to this shit. And things came to a head on December the 29th, 1890, when the Wounded Knee Massacre occurred.
Oh, right.
And 153 Lakota, including women and children, were shot dead by American authorities. And this was very much seen as the last stand of the Native Americans within the United States.
Yeah.
This was also...
You're saying this is because of the dance?
I'm saying...
The dance freaked them out a bit too much.
Yeah. I mean, listen... American settlers had already been wiping out tribe after tribe after tribe.
Yeah.
But clearly the American army were going, Native Americans dancing freaky, let's kill them all.
Ugh.
And so I think
people are dreadful.
Yeah, so never mind Custer's last stand.
Yeah.
The last stand of Wovoka, which was the ghost dance, I believe is the worst dance of all time.
Did they dance it to Ghost Town?
if only they had.
No, Monster Mash.
I've got one suggestion.
Yeah.
All right.
I would like to nominate the Morris dance.
Brilliant. delighted that you've gone for that.
On the grounds that it is just too sexy.
What is sexy about Morris dancing?
Actually,
first of all, for our non-British listeners, do you want to explain briefly what Morris dancing looks like?
It's a very sort of primal, passionate English mating dance. Dance between a man and a handkerchief. It's
the most basic of mating rituals.
It's very weird. Yeah, and there are those guys and they wear... What do they wear? They wear, like, bells.
And breech stockings.
Yeah.
They'd dance around and
green flower and flowers on their hats sometimes.
And hankies and waving them. Isn't there, are there like, sticks in some of them?
Yeah, and they have a stick. So it's basically they whack their stick.
Yeah.
And then while they wave their handkerchief. It is a I don't know what. I assume it is a representation of masturbation. I'm assuming that's what it is. I don't know.
It might be a fertility dance. I think it's also keeping the evil spirits away because it's just like, watch out, otherwise we'll whack you with our whacking sticks.
We're in blackface.
I was about to say, waiting for you to drop that.
They've got the blackface to represent their racism. Yeah.
That's not all of them, but there are still some of them.
The ones you don't put blackface on, you know that they've got the boot polish in the back pocket somewhere. They're like, oh, we really want to.
Yeah, they're waiting for it to get dark.
So did you have to do like Morris dancing lessons? Or anything, because they do folk dancing lessons in some schools. I didn't grow up in this country. Our dancing is just moving our legs. Waving in Irish dancing.
My kids did learn a maypole dance, which is pretty close to the Morris.
They do
like folk dancing from all different countries.
Okay,
so they do
good.
Like they do Irish dancing and they do Indian dancing and they do all sorts of stuff. But they also do the maypole, and it's really really noticeable. How much more boring that dance is than any other. They did the haka. They came and did a haka, and you were just like, wow, this is so exciting. This is so amazing. And then you go, and now 20 minutes of threading ribbons around.
I'd love to see, though, loads of tiny 7 and 8 year old girls doing a haka.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I did Jewish dancing when I went to a Jewish primary school, and Jewish dancing is basically a fight, and if you're lucky, a dance breaks out. There's all these men going arm in arm, going faster and faster and faster until someone gets a head injury.
Yeah.
It is brilliant.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Isn't it sort of... Are they sort of fertility things? Because it's always like late spring and May and that sort of things are always happening.
I think it wasn't originally, but I think it's now become associated because it's part of the May Day festival, isn't it? And the English fertility rituals.
We're recording this on the day that Donald Trump has threatened Iran via Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And I did actually notice, retweeted into my timeline today, a tweet from the Shrewsbury Morris dancers who tweeted, in caps... Never ever threaten Morris dancers again, or we will come and dance on your doorsteps, in your gardens, and on your cars, making you suffer dance consequences, the like of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. Be cautious. 3 winky faces.
I like the fact that they added the 3 winky faces in case the CIA get the wrong idea.
Yeah. Have you ever been threatened by a Morris dancer?
That is definitely an old music hall song, isn't it?
I was threatened by a Morris dancer, brackets, and I live to tell the tale.
I haven't. I saw when I did the Buxton Fringe a couple of years ago, and there were some blackface ones that I was like, no, I'm going to run away from you.
I know there's somewhere there's like a wet rag and a stick in the middle of it, and you fuck the wet rag at someone's face in the middle of them as well. They're really odd.
There's my favourite version of them is in a Terry Pratchett novel, Lords and Ladies, which is sort of like a riff on Midsummer Night's Dream.
I know, I've read it.
Good.
Yeah.
Just in case.
I know, I've read it. I like Terry Pratchett.
So you should. So should everyone. Just in case our listeners haven't.
Okay.
Although I'd like to hope our listeners are the demographic that are well into their Pratchett.
Yeah.
But I love that it is literally used to smack a bunch of elves in the face. And it's weird. There's like I feel like British folk traditions are mostly utterly cringeworthy, but the bits that you feel have got a connection back to ancient paganism have got a little bit of.
I had a mate who used to do ancient. He used to do an English martial art, which
was not the shin kicking thing.
It was basically kicking people in the shins. It was fighting someone with a stick. It was. Stick fighting.
Okay.
So it was whacking people around the head with a stick. It's basically what it was. But I mean, that's kind of Morris dancing. There is an element of it that's all right, you know. Is it? Is it sort of ritualized version of just mugging people? Or
we have a friend who does rapper, which is a type of Morris dance involving swords and intertwining them and tightening them, and that's really cool.
Yeah,
they're going in on in and around each other and making these. Like, everyone has this sort of bendy sword, and there's probably 6 or 8 of them, and they manage to get in such a way that one of them can hold all of them at once, or they're...
That doesn't sound like real Morris dance.
I know, it's a much better
with
version
bendy
of
bendy swords.
It's Northumberland dancing originally. It was coal miners who did rapper, and it because the ponies, would get, pit ponies would go down the mine, and they'd come up covered in sweat and soot, and they would use these... not really swords,
the sort
just,
of blades, but
yeah, blades to scrape the muck off the ponies. Yeah. And then they went, let's dance with these.
That's cool, isn't it? Yeah. It's also just that question, I suppose it's just that essential question of what is the dance for? Like,
yeah, but doesn't seem to be like, much in terms of like, because most dance, a lot of dancing anyway, is like a. It's allowing you to be close to a member of the or indeed same sex. And that is like, we must keep you as far away from each other as possible and arm you to protect yourself from any advances.
That makes it the most English dance, doesn't it?
It's the Brexit of dancers.
It's the way, like, it's just that the Cubans have, you know, like, the Lambada and... Is it Cuban?
We have tango in Argentina.
Those are the dancers. You've got the Morris.
One thing I did know about Morris dancing is that Shakespeare's actor William Kemp danced from London to Norwich in 1600 over the course of 9 days, which is where we get the phrase 9 days wonder from, when someone has, like, a sudden burst of fame and then disappears. Comes on, it's called a 9 days wonder.
And comedian Tim Fitzhyam did exactly the same thing as well. Yes. One of his ridiculous world records.
What do you think?
There's also a thing called Molly dancing, apparently, in Cambridgeshire, where one of the dancers dresses as a woman. Naughty. There are mixed, usually all men, but there are mixed Morris groups now.
I don't approve of that.
It was better in the old days when it was just men waving their sticks and hankies.
Yeah.
We talked when we did our World's Worst Baker episode with Ed Kimber about the dancing plague of 1518. Do you remember that? So in 1518 in Strasbourg, over the course of 4 to 6 days, a woman started dancing and just kept being joined by people. Up to 400 people at one point. As many as 15 of them a day were apparently dying from exhaustion and heart attacks and things like that.
Oh my, that's so great. Do you ever hear about the laughing plague in China?
Some of these mass hysteria things.
One of those mass hysteria things. Yeah, where all the loads of girls started laughing hysterically until they became... They were all fainting and...
Gigs like that.
That's basically what most of my gigs are like.
Absolutely.
It's Nick... apparently the word for it is choreomania.
Oh.
Which I think is the name of a dance show that needs to happen, frankly. The authorities in Strasbourg didn't particularly help it by... they thought that the best thing to do would be to set up a stage and hire musicians so people would dance themselves out. You know, their version of walking it off.
Yeah.
It's their version of rope-a-dope, really, isn't it?
Let's just fan this fire.
Yeah, apparently...
Choreomania is a great
It's a really good word, isn't it? apparently, there were lots of these outbreaks. In 1237, a large group of kids danced from Erfurt to Arnstadt, a distance of about 20 kilometres, around the same time as the legend of the Pied Piper grew up, apparently.
Oh.
In 1278, 200 people managed to collapse a bridge over the River Meuse in Germany. And in 1374 in Aachen, there was a dance that spread to Cologne and Flanders and Strasbourg and Utrecht and as far away as Italy and Luxembourg, and it happened again in 1375 and 1376.
Why is it all the Germans that are dancing?
One of the beliefs that people had was that this was a curse you got from a Christian saint, either St. John the Baptist or St. Vitus, who was a 4th century martyr, because a lot of these broke out around his feast day on June 15th. And the way you paid homage to him was you would dance in front of his statue. So the belief is maybe those things as an opportunity to dance, which was kind of not something you really did back then, they just spread and people got really into it. St. Vitus, by the way, is the patron saint of dancers, actors and comedians.
Oh.
There you go. Also epilepsy, snake bites and oversleeping.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, so both week one and week three of the Edinburgh Fringe.
My favourite thing about it is that some of these dancers didn't just stop at dancing. Sometimes people ripped their clothes off, made rude gestures at passers-by and even had sex with each other in the street.
Great.
Yeah. So it was like someone, dancing plague has broken out. Oh no. My clothes have fallen off. Maybe that's what happened in the revolution in Newcastle then.
Yeah, it could be. I didn't look at the toxicology report for him afterwards.
But maybe that's why it was all the Germans, though. Just because it's quite a repressed culture.
Yeah, they're just finally able to
let go. Finally, an opportunity to bang someone in the gutter.
Pretty much was it, because it died out by the sort of around the mid 17th century when things were getting a little bit more enlightened and restoration-y.
Right.
Basically,
yeah,
these dancing plagues stopped.
Maybe the Germans were actually really vivacious and extrovert and outgoing, but they just wore themselves out in the medieval times, and they've become very staid and repressed.
They've danced themselves out.
Yeah.
It worked.
I read about the waltz, which spread in the 1700s. It was considered really sexy in its day. Like, touching somebody else and being as close, like having your body as close to them as you do in the waltz. In 1818, the governess of the French royals, Madame de Genlis, wrote, "A young woman, lightly dressed, throws herself into the arms of a young man. He presses her to his chest and conquers her with such impetuosity that she soon feels her heart beat violently as her head giddily swims. That is what they call waltzing."
Now that's what I call waltzing.
It is. If you'd had like American local TV back then, you can imagine them doing a report on this new dangerous craze your kids could be up to. Do you know if your child has been waltzing? And apparently it spawned, the waltz is what spawned all the public dance halls that grew up in the public ballrooms. In spring in 1832 in Vienna, it was estimated that half the population of the city had attended at least one ball at the Apollo Hall in Vienna. Oh. It was amazing.
It is quite a sexy dance, the waltz, though.
Yeah, but I mean, we've gone sexier, but for its time, yeah, it was really...
It can be.
It's romantic. It's a romantic.
Yes,
that's
yeah.
It's
yeah.
It's the body content, and you're meant to sort of expose your neck as a woman and all of that.
It's the sort of sex that your grandparents have on their 50th wedding anniversary. That you're like, oh, someone's going to have a broken hip at the end, but there's love in there. It's not like the tango is like, we're going to rut like animals after this.
You want to know about the tango?
Tell me about the tango.
Yes. I grew up in Argentina in the 1870s. Argentina, so a lot of men from the European continent, particularly, went to South America and Argentina at this time to try and make their fortune, find work, make some money and send it back to their families. So there was a big gender imbalance in Argentina. There were a lot more men than women. And so the only way the men could meet a lot of women was going to dances. But if you wanted to go to a dance, you better look good dancing. So a lot of the men learnt tango from each other. So the tango started out with men practicing with men.
Hmm.
And apparently there were stories of... because it was really risque, putting your leg between someone else's leg during a dance is not really something that... dancers up to that period did.
It's that sort of pendulum move, isn't it?
Ganchos and things, what it's called when you whip your leg in and out between them and so on, and you dip them and all of that. But a lot of the names of tangos reference prostitution, and the story of some of them is meant to be that they, apparently, the story is that it's telling the story of the pimp and her and his prostitute.
Aww. And of course, the greatest tango of all time is Roxanne.
Do we all have to drink now? I read about some novelty dances. Saturday Night by Wigfield.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Do you know that? Do you know all of these ones? Macarena and all those, same area. We're all, for listeners at home, we're doing the movements. She wasn't really aware there was a dance to her song. If you look at the video, she isn't doing the dance in it.
She's just getting ready for
She's just getting
out.
Ready for a night out. Yeah, yeah. But do you remember it so vividly?
Great night out.
Yeah.
It was one of the few pop songs in the 90s that I... deemed worthy as that arrogant teenager that I was.
Well, apparently the dance was the dance her backing dancers did on Top of the Pops when she appeared in it. And so, and then she went around the country and people were doing the dance to her and she was like, oh wait, there's a dance in this. the other one I read about was the Macarena by Los Del Rio, of course. The week Macarena dropped in 1996 happened to be the week of the Democratic National Party's convention in America when Clinton and Al Gore were seeking re-election.
I don't like where this story is going.
There was a video on YouTube of the delegates at the convention doing the Macarena. Best of all is Al Gore doing his speech to the convention saying, "Do y'all want to see Al Gore's version of the Macarena?" And he just stands there for 10 seconds then goes, "You want to see it again?"
That's quite a good cell phone.
Well, recognising that you're immensely boring. Before I get to my choice, I read about some old dance crazes. The mash, obviously some of them great names. The mashed potato, the bunny hug and the bunny hop. Charleston, of course, the twist, the turkey trot. My favourite one I found was the grizzly bear, which dates from the 1900s. The instructions for the grizzly bear are, everyone yells, "It's a bear!" And then you do that heavy sort of side-to-side sway with your arms out, bending your upper body like you're a drunken bear.
Hang on.
It wasn't for the... It was meant to look like really shit dancing, apparently.
Sure. And like a drunken bear. How many drunken bears have you seen for a reference point outside of cartoons?
Or outside of gay bars?
Come on now.
So it was apparently introduced by Fanny Bryce, the subject of the film Funny Girl, at the Ziegfeld Follies. The Ziegfeld Follies were one of the big Broadway variety shows. And Fanny Bryce was one of the first female comedians. But New York, it didn't go down too well in some quarters. New York City issued a ban on the dance in 1912 because they thought it was just too
rubbish.
Silly.
Just too silly.
And Woodrow Wilson cancelled his inauguration ball because of modern dances like the turkey trot and the grizzly bear.
God, Woodrow Wilson's such a prude, isn't
he? He's really unlikable.
Yeah.
And the final thing I learned is that it's illegal to dance in some places.
Mm-hmm.
So it was illegal to dance after midnight in Japan until 2015. In Kuwait, it's restricted largely to being allowed to clap and sway a bit. And Sweden, razor ban on dancing in unlicensed bars, but apparently it's still being enforced that people are having their bars raided because people are dancing in them. Yeah, you think Sweden are all down for... Yeah, even now. This is only a couple of years ago.
That I get fined or they get fined?
The bar gets fined.
Can you imagine if you don't like the owner of the bar and like, guys, we're just going to go in there and have a little boogie?
You can imagine the number of Swedish barmen who are like, no flash mobs, please. But my choice for the world's worst dance is daggering. Have you seen daggering demonstrated?
No.
So we go back to Jamaica only about 12 years ago, 2006, when there was a wave of dancehall music sweeping the nation of Jamaica. And daggering simulates dry sex, wrestling, and other frantic moves. If I tell you to imagine someone doing someone from behind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Imagine them doing it like jackhammer speed. Then imagine them maybe shoving them to the ground and doing press-ups onto them. Maybe also doing like the worm onto them. Maybe climbing onto like a speaker or a banquette and tombstoning down on top of them.
Much consent is involved in this dance?
I mean, apparently some, but then again, some of the photos of the of women having maybe a table dropped on them, or being daggered while someone has a breeze block, or indeed a tire rim on their face. Oh. It's very much about submission for one partner.
I'm going to say that if the amount of consent involved in a practice is some, that is not enough consent.
Yeah, it's not great. There was a ban on it. The Jamaican Broadcasting Corporation banned any music and videos that encouraged this sort of music, which then led to a debate about freedom of speech among artists and musicians, of course. But if you think the people doing these dance moves, and genuinely some of them are like ridiculous, how if you were an 11-year-old and you'd never heard what sex was, but you heard someone having really vigorous sex next door, it's how you might imagine it would look.
I was brought up in Trinidad, and they used to have these kind of very sexy dances which were quite explicit. They have like whining. You know what whining is?
No.
What's that?
In fact, I'll nominate that for the worst dance in the world, is my mum whining.
What's whining look like?
It's literally you just sort of gyrate your pelvis.
Yeah.
But my mum would try to do it in a ladylike way.
Oh, no.
So, and you can't do that in a ladylike way. So it would just sort of become this weird little snake with sort of just trying to do very small, sexy shoulders.
The world's slowest hula hoop.
It was just disgusting. It's also just seeing your mum gyrating her pelvis is not...
Yeah.
And chipping, they used to do chipping. That's like you... It's like you're gonna... God, it's hard describing dances, isn't it?
You were like milking a large cow in front of
you. You kind of hop up your knees and you just... Like you're gonna do... It's like you're running to the toilet.
Yeah.
Across hot coals because you need a poo.
Yeah.
It's like a sort of chipping. They weren't disgusting dancers.
This is really vile, actually, watching it. But if you think the people doing the daggering are dicks, you might be glad to hear what happened to some of them.
Oh, okay.
Doctors in Kingston reported a spike in instances of broken penises around the time.
Oh!
One surgeon said that during very vigorous intercourse, the penis slips out, and in an attempt to ram it back in, the man hits the pubic bone and pops the penis. The same guy issued advice that if you heard a loud pop, experienced excruciating pain, swelling, and possibly saw blood, you should seek help, as if any man in that position would already know that.
Yeah, wouldn't go, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. What I would like to see happen is for people who like partaking in daggering to go to Malmo and go into a bar in Malmo and start daggering and see how the Swedish authorities take it.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, they're doing more than dancing. Bring everyone down here. Who? Everyone!
So our candidates this week for the World's Worst Dance are Ben's suggestion of the ghost dance of the Native Americans as led by Wovoka, Abby's suggestion of the sexless sexiness of Morris dancing.
So hot.
Get your handkerchief out, lads.
And my suggestion of daggering from Jamaica. Ghost dance, I mean, it was ineffective.
Yeah.
But it also was a cultural outcry from a threatened peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel kicking them when they're down would be inappropriate in our position.
Mate, if you want to deny something that is essentially a Indian burial ground and think it will be good for this podcast...
We're going to build this podcast on top of it.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to discount ghost dancing. Daggering is really vile and vicious and did lead to horrible broken penises. But you know what?
No way! No! I'm sorry, you cannot choose Morris dancing over daggering unless they are Morris dancing with their penises.
How about Morris daggering?
Morris daggering.
Right, yeah, done.
Morris daggering. I think basically...
I'm pretty sure he was the ambassador to Jamaica in the 1940s, wasn't he? So Morris daggering.
Morris dancing is the restrained version of daggering. let's go with daggering. It elicited some really primal sounds from you guys.
Yeah.
And Morris dancing is, I mean, lovable, but stupid.
Yeah.
Before we go, I've got to give you some of the world's worst news of the week. And that news comes from various sources. People have noticed the symbol on the Lyle's golden syrup tins.
Yeah.
You know, the Lyle's golden syrup. Everyone has like a tub of it at the back of your cupboard that you use once a decade. It's got a little line on it. It's got this green tin, sort of quite like ornate like.
Yeah, it's sort of a little regal feel to
it. Yeah, very regal feel. And then a little oval. Lyle's golden syrup.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And there's a little oval in the middle of it with a lion in it. The line is dead, guys.
Mm-hmm.
People on Reddit have just noticed this week that the line is dead. Not only is he dead, he's been eaten by what they think look like flies.
It's actually bees, I think.
It's just a line corpse with lots of little dots around them. And if you look close enough when you're opening your tin of syrup... Oh, yeah, that's what I want to think about, a corpse of a dead animal. Apparently, the guy who founded the company, it's a reference to a story from the Bible. Samson killed a lion. And when he came back to the corpse, he saw that bees had built a hive inside it and had made honey. And so he took honey from it and gave it to his parents. I presume he didn't tell them where he had obtained the honey. Abby, before we leave people, tell them about your show in Edinburgh and everything else. And where
they
can find out
about
you.
Mum dancing in the show.
Really?
Yes.
Brilliant.
And some other... We dance to Berlin's Take My Breath Away, actually, at one point. But it's not... It's a play called Kin at the Underbelly at 4 p.m.
Cool. And there's a lot of daggering in it.
There's loads of daggering, which I'm now putting in.
And that's if you're at the Edinburgh Festival. If they want to find out about you generally, you have a website as well, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I haven't updated that in a while.
Great. So if you can find it...
So if you can find me...
Meanwhile, we're all off to find a group of Morris dancers and twerk in the middle of them.
Oh yeah.
Until next week, goodbye.
Bye.
One, two, three, step. 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, 7, 8, 4, 9 squared. That was lovely. Well done to all of us, I feel.
Yeah.
Letting our inner dancer run free. Our tiny, tiny dancers.
And also well done for us for recording with the curtains closed, surrounded by pillows in 30 degree heat.
It is so hot.
Yeah.
God, yeah. Abby was... wearing strapless, and I was nearly tempted to rip off my shirt at one point during this episode.
Yeah, I look like something out of Thunderdome Muppet Babies edition.
Do find Abby. She's on Twitter, and you can find her website. And if you are in Edinburgh, do go see her show as well. As you heard, she is delightful and very engaging and a fab performer as well.
Yeah, and as me and Abby discussed just before the recording, Kin, the play she's in, is written and directed by a pal of mine, Max Dickens, who is a genuinely excellent theatre maker. So huge recommendations for that. We have a fun thing for you guys.
Yeah, if you've been enjoying all the regular episodes, some of you might have already seen last week, a couple of weeks ago, we recorded a video of ourselves playing the game of Monopoly with past guest and friend of the show, Paul Flannery. We had said when we reached 10 pledgers on Patreon that we would release some sort of bonus extra content for you all, and indeed this was it. We decided to endure the worst board game in the world. So you can find that on our Facebook. Look up Worstwood Forward on Facebook, and we will be releasing the audio episode of it at some point during the week ahead. It'll be on SoundCloud. It'll just arrive in your podcast apps. So yeah, keep an eye out for that.
And just to point out, it's not just three guys playing Monopoly against their will.
Yeah.
We made sure that pretty much every square we landed on, we had some trivia, preferably worst trivia possible, to share with you about the world of Monopoly. So here's the thing, listeners. We obviously would love you to donate to us on Patreon. And if we reach our next goal, which is 25 pledges, then we will release extra content, an extra episode single month.
Something like that,
yeah,
every month, yeah.
Partially, we were talking about, hey, let's just pick one of the world's worst somethings that was a winner and really drill down into that. I'm also tempted just to pick another Monopoly board, play it, and use that as a springboard for trivia based on that particular Monopoly board.
We have Muppets Monopoly in the house, so if we did the world... I mean, I'm not going to pick a world's worst Muppet. They're all brilliant. But, yeah, or can we just play board games each week, Ben? Can we just do that, please?
What, just turn into another podcast?
Monopoly was terrible.
It was, God damn it. Awful.
So do find us on Patreon, patreon.com/worstwoodforward, and you can find out about all the rewards we have there, including if you are a pledger already, you will be getting monthly bonus little episodes and features every month already. You'll already know that. If you didn't know that, well, maybe that's an incentive for you to go and sign up.
Maybe it is. And if you want to just keep listening and not donating, that's absolutely cool. Like, you know, we understand that money is tight and there are, oh my God, so many podcasts out there. But if you do just want to keep listening for free, but want to help us out in some way, easiest thing you can do, pop on iTunes or Stitcher and give us a 5-star review to bump us up the algorithm charts and recommend us to like-minded friends who you think might be into this sort of thing.
One of the things that we really find useful is if you follow us on Twitter at WorstFoot or on Facebook, WorstFoot Forward, you can share with a couple of friends, because that'll get... Who knows how many people will look at that,
yeah,
and randomly come across. A couple of the reviews we've had recently on iTunes have been someone saying, I just randomly came across this, or it was recommended to me, and they just love it. So that's really nice when stuff like that happens.
It is, yeah. I checked out our stats this week, and 1 or 2 weeks ago, we had a listener in Peru. So hello to Paddington. I hope you enjoy this.
Also, if you do want to get in touch, you can do it via all of those means, or send us an email to worstwoodforwardpodcast@gmail.com with suggestions of topics, episodes, guests, and serving suggestions, because we are slowly baking.
Yes, we are. And what are we going to bake into next week? Probably going to be Francesco, isn't it?
I think it is, yes.
Yeah, so Francesco Di Carlo, who is an Italian stand-up comedian who has been trumpeted, I guess is the right word, by Eddie Izzard. When a few years ago, Eddie went round...
Lucky him.
Lucky him, yeah. Eddie sort of went round, was doing a world tour and found comics in different countries and helped promote them. The most famous one of those is Trevor Noah, that Eddie spotted, and Francesco was his Italian apprentice, and I've had him on at my own club. He's absolutely banging, and he's going to come and talk to us about the world's worst prank.
Ben, look behind you.
What? Oh God, no! Bees covered in razor blades.
So next week I'm just going to be playing board games that I like on my own. Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @Podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.